happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'm on the road speaking on a telephone. Therefore, the technical quality of the program will not be what it is when I'm in studio or have my portable Comrex unit with me, which I hopefully will have tomorrow. Today, we're going to talk about the latest on health and healing, including how bedtime use of medical devices or media devices more than doubles the risk of poor sleep in children. That's not good, because that can lead to a lot of illnesses. This is from Cardiff University. And then a successful treatment for AIDS. We're going to show you something that Washington University study finds is very effective at helping people with AIDS, and that's good news. Fruits and vegetables, a powerful treatment for kidney disease, according to a latest scientific report. And I'm going to share five phytonutrients you should be eating every day because they slow down the aging process and a lot more on health. Then today, we're going to take on several issues, including the thing that, and I found some of these to be very important and we could really use this. This is from Prevent Disease, things to embrace in the new year to end procrastination, anxiety, guilt, frustration, and anger. And if you find any of these of value, use them. Also, President Obama quietly signed a propaganda act to counter fake news, and the European Union is following. And I'll share the latest from TruePublica, Graham Vandenberg on this. So what they're doing is they're going to say that they need a new commission, a new agency of government, a new bureaucracy that will qualify all news, including internet. So they believe for any subjective reason that what you're suggesting, saying, stating, hypothesizing on the internet or any other source, and that can include books or articles as well, that they can censor. Not only censor, they can go after you. So we should pay attention to this. Or not. Do you believe it matters? Do you believe that we, and a lot of people love big government. They love more bureaucracies, the better. The more laws and rules, regulations, the more committees people looking into your life, controlling life, the better it is for some people. I don't know if you believe that, but a lot of people do for three reasons. What are the three reasons that tell you that this is a good thing for most Americans, where if the government doesn't like something you're saying, they have a right to shut you up, shut you down, and kick your ass? Isn't that good? Who's fighting it? Who's complaining about it? Where is the media covering it? And yet it's a law, because the president signed this late at night on a Friday night, and the media hasn't touched it. We will, because once you have a law that can determine what is legitimate news and what is fake news, then every single person that holds any position contrary to the government or corporations, because they're one and the same now, they will be put out of business and the people prosecuted. I'll deal with that. Also, finally, someone came forward who actually was working with Saddam Hussein when he was a prisoner and said, quote, Saddam Hussein was not worth removing from power. Really? Well, a lot of us were saying that all along. He was a tyrant, no question about that. He did not treat his citizens all equally, but he was no threat to the United States or to Europe or the other countries. So why are they now saying, well, he wasn't a problem? Well, Gaddafi wasn't a problem, and Assad's not a problem. So why have we expended so much capital and so many human lives, both the citizens, innocent in those countries, and American soldiers? Do we even have the capacity to do any critical introspective thinking? Or are we simply one lost group of people incapable of making any reasonable, rational, spiritual choices? As a society, just take a look from the White House to Congress, boy, and the media, the Bill O'Reillys and the Sean Hannitys and the and all the clowns on MSNBC and PBS and of course, Wonder Bread for the Brain, NPR. That should give you a hint of what my feelings on this are, and I'm going to go into that today. Also, I do not believe in political correctness. I do not believe that if you know the truth and you should say the truth, even if someone is offended by it, screw their being offended, get the truth out. Otherwise, you end up raising a generation after generation who can't handle the truth. They don't want to know the truth. And then one day, we no longer even pretend that the truth matters. Being politically correct is what matters. So we're going to have a couple people weigh in on this today. And you're going to hear a little later some people who are well-known on political correctness, and that would be Bill Maher and another individual who discussed this, Dennis Miller. Free speech versus political correctness. Also, we're at war right now, officially in five countries. Can you name the countries? We'll give you a little insight into that as we go along. So that's our program today. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. I want to see whether or not the science, the actual hard science, the independent science, could prove that electrical devices that most people use and find a big convenience, such as cell phones and computers, if these are emitting enough of the electro pulses that can adversely affect the chromosomes, your biochemistry. There are right now over 41 separate studies in the scientific literature showing the answer is yes. And it goes yes to brain cancers, yes to skull cancers, yes to disrupting melatonin in being secreted, so you're not getting good recovery at night. So there's no question these are dangerous. This is the latest, and this is from Cardiff University. Quote, a Cardiff University study has found that children using screen-based media devices at bedtime have 200% risk of inadequate sleep duration compared to children without access to such a device. The study, which comprised a systematic review of 20 existing observational studies involving 125,198 children, also found that sleep quality and daytime sleepiness were affected to a similar magnitude. Dr. Ben Carter of Cardiff University School of Medicine said, quote, our study is the first to consolidate results across existing research and provides further proof of the detrimental effect of media devices on both sleep duration and quality. Sleep is often an undervalued but important part of children's development, with a regular lack of sleep causing a variety of health problems. And now with smartphones and tablets, and the problems of poor sleep are increasing. And by the way, 72% of children, 89% of adolescents have at least one device in their sleeping environment. And most are used near bedtime. So my suggestion for parents, take away all devices, unplug the computers, and give a time to where a child should go to bed. You're going to help the child. They may be angry with you and call protective services on you. But in the end, whatever you have to do to bring some discipline back into the house and some responsibility for the choices they make, instead of letting them do whatever they want, whenever they want, because they're just little precious cupcakes, aren't they? No, they're not. And it's time that we realize what happens when you have people who are not prepared to be adults, then they're going to have children who are not prepared to be anything other than spoiled brats. And now you're going to give them cancer. You already got them disease. You got them obese. You got them diabetic with adult diabetes. You got them with arthritis and heart disease before the age of 10. Just hard to fathom how we have not focused upon the health and well-being of our children. And the moment they don't do what they're expected to do, you give them a label of ADHD, and you give them Ritalin. You give them a psychoactive drug. And then when they start committing suicide, in between 10 and 14-year-old boys, the number one cause of death is suicide. When I was growing up, no one ever committed suicide. Was that an anomaly? No, that was normal. But when you take normal behavior and you pathologize it, you're going to have negative consequences. So stop accepting that there is a brain chemical imbalance in your children that deserves a diagnosis and a drug. It does not. And stop believing that somehow you should be a best friend of your kid. That's not your purpose. It's to be a good parent. To give them the love, the guidance, and the structure, and the discipline so that they appreciate the world they live in, respect other people, and don't start the process that makes them feel that they're entitled to their prejudice, they're entitled to bigotry, they're entitled to their indifference, they're entitled to their diversions. Because then you end up in the world we live in today. How's that working out for you? Not so good. So just remember, it starts with something as simple as saying, this are the rules, no cell phones. And their kids actually sleep with their cell phones on under their pillow. Well, those kids are going to end up with such a high degree of brain abnormalities, learning disabilities, brain cancers, skull cancers, jaw cancers, it'll be an epidemic within the next 10 years. Now, the good news on another subject, because there's nothing good when it comes to parenting today, or in our school system, it's just a total mess. And unfortunately, the people who have caused it are also the people running much of the system. But there's good news over at Washington University School of Medicine. Quote, this is what Albert Einstein said. This is just, I thought, it kind of a neat little statement. He said, if the bee disappeared off the surface of the globe, man would only have 4 years to live. No more bees, no more pollination, no more men. Ever wonder why bees are so important to our survival? One of the thousands of reasons is the fact that they may help in the treatment of AIDS. Scientists at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis have found that by poking holes in the protective envelope surrounding HIV and other viruses, what is called melittin, M-E-L-I-T-T-I-N, that's a toxin found in bee venom, kills the human immunodeficiency virus while leaving the body unharmed. This breakthrough could help lead to drugs that are immune to HIV resistance and development of an anti-HIV vaginal gel, for example, and other ways of treating people. So that's good news. And again, it's something that's natural out of the bee. From another health publication, we find that fruits and vegetables are good for kidney disease. And this is from Health Day, quote, kidney disease patients who eat 3 to 4 more servings of fruits and vegetables every day could lower their blood pressure and nearly halve their medication cost. The findings stem from a multi-year tracking of a small group of patients in which standard medical treatment was compared with a simple nutritional intervention. The goal to see which approach did a better job at driving down both blood pressure and drug expenses. The results on both fronts showed a clear win for healthy food. Dr. Gorea described the links seen between increased fruit and vegetable intake, kidney disease control, and lower medical expenses as huge. Quote, the impact was visible from the very first year. This study has been done over 5 years, and every year since the therapy with fruits and vegetables began, we were able to lower medications, end quote. And she is the director of nephrology at a university down in Texas. So for anyone suffering from problems with their kidneys, remember, the more fruits and vegetables, the better. Just watch the amount of potassium, because you can't have excess potassium. And I mentioned something about phytonutrients. Now, phytonutrients are the very important and healing nutrients that are found in all of nature. You get some in nuts and seeds and legumes and pulses and tubers, but that's a small amount compared to what you get in fruits and vegetables. Here are the ones that I believe if you took on a daily basis in juices, in concentrates, in powder, or fresh fruits and vegetables would help you live longer, prevent disease, help your skin stay younger longer. Flavonoids. Now, flavonoids, you're going to find when you eat parsley, onions, apples, oranges, blueberries. In terms of detoxification, they bind to heavy metals in the body, and then that facilitates removal through your urine. They also tone down inflammation in the body. So if you have a lot of inflammation going on in your joints or muscles, the more flavonoids you take, the better it is. In fact, one of the things I always recommend when someone says, oh, Gary, I've got really bad joint pain, I say, okay, or lower back pain, then give yourself a blueberry concentrate each day. You take a pint to a quart of blueberries, and you can juice them, and then you also add in another good would be strawberries and raspberries, and you drink that. That's the best thing in the world for flavonoids to get them in the system. Another way you can get flavonoids in the system is you can take the skin of 5 apples, peel them, organic apples, put it in a blender, put 1 teaspoon of coconut oil, 1 teaspoon of flaxseed oil, and then put some very important beet juice. You blend that, maybe 12 ounces it'll come to, and you drink that down. That will flood the body with flavonoids, and that helps turn off pain, turns off inflammation. Then you have another group of that's very important of the phytonutrients, and these are the EGCG. That's the epigallocatechin 3 gallate. And that is important because it's a super strong detoxifier, and it also, the EGCG triggers increased production of certain genes and enzymes responsible for detoxifying your body. So you turn off inflammation, you get rid of toxins, and the best way of doing that is with green tea. Now, my favorite of all the phytonutrients is quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. And citrus fruits, apples, onions, parsley, nuts, peas, and blueberries, blackberries, and bilberries, and black currants. And like all the others, they're anti-inflammatory, they're antioxidants. They also bind to heavy metals, lead, cadmium, nickel, mercury, take them out of the body, and aluminum. But it also boosts the enzymes responsible for detoxification in the body. It also helps your skin. It helps if you have a little bruising. It'll help repair bruising. And it's good for your gums to help if you had recession of your gums and any bleeding in the gums. It helps that. Capillaries, little splotchy veins on the face. It helps that. It also kills viruses. And so when someone has hepatitis or herpes or cytomegalovirus, adenovirus, Coxsackie virus, I always make sure that they're getting anywhere between 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams in divided doses a day. Of course, then always take them with vitamin C. Twice the amount of vitamin C as quercetin. You take them together. It makes a big difference. And then, of course, the superstar of superstars, curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N. That's the primary ingredient in turmeric, and it is the most healthy of all the spices. There are so many actions it does in the body. Again, like all the other phytonutrients, it binds with heavy metals, fights inflammation from toxins, increases production of enzymes to detoxify, but then it goes on to help prevent cancer, help prevent cancer from spreading if you already have it in the body. It's phenomenal. And anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day. And then, of course, your organosulfur compounds. That would be from, Well, they're rather pungent, kind of a bittery taste. Onions, garlic, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, kale, turnips, radishes, mustard, bok choy. Those all have organosulfur, and that binds to and aids in the excretion of heavy metals, detoxifies the body, and helps prevent cancer from either occurring or stops it if it does. And also, there's one final thing here. In the new year, I'd like to see people deal with anxiety and guilt and frustration, anger issues. And a lot of people smile to your face and be angry behind your back, or they try to suppress their anger, but then they take it out on themselves or other people. And the chronic complainers, I find, that the people always find a reason to bitch. Well, if you got a reason to bitch, don't come around me, because I really don't like people that bitch all the time. If you come around because you're looking and have some solutions. Whether the solutions work or not, that's okay. Much rather be around people who are looking for solutions than people pointing fingers because they never stop pointing and they never stop bitching. But maybe I'm wrong. Tell me someone you know in your life that's ever stopped being a bitch. Stop complaining. Stop being angry at the world. Stop blaming everyone else for their own failures in life. You ever met such a person? That suddenly one day they wake up and they're just a different human being, a different man, different woman, different person. I haven't. So let them be. Let them live their own karma, because they will meet and live their own karma in this lifetime. But that doesn't mean because some artificial commitment, some barrier to guilt and shame, that you have to stick with these people like they're the crazy glue of your psychic connection. They are not. And you should get rid of these people in your life by saying goodbye, wish you well, and go on with your life. They will continue to hate you or be angry with you because they live in this loveless place. But that's their problem, not yours. Have the courage to say, friend, you don't deserve my energy. You don't deserve my time. You don't deserve my friendship. You don't deserve what I am. So best you align yourself with people who respect and admire you and accept you for who you are. And I'm not that person. Just be honest. And then you're free of that. And that's like walking outside of a toxic cloud of dust. You can breathe clean air, meet people that respect you, don't want to change you, don't want to use you, don't want to exploit you. That's an important idea for this coming year. But there are other suggestions, too. For example, accept responsibility. What's this mean? Well, guilt is a trick of the mind. Accept responsibility for yourself, for your life, for your actions. You are response-able. Break it down. You are an adult. You are accountable, meaning with every action you take, you account for it. You choose to do it. You must accept the consequences of it. And you did it all for a reason, to learn. If you continue to feel guilty, you stop learning. Guilt blocks learning. Shame blocks learning. Insecurity blocks learning. Anger and rage block your learning. Frustration blocks learning. And then you attract every single person and experience in your life. And so you must come to terms that there are all experiences of life. Leave them at that level. These are experiences. Do I grow wiser, or am I somehow negatively impacted by the experience I just had? It didn't take long to get up on this learning curve. So you start seeing what is good for you, good food, good thought, good conversation, good scholarship, and good social commitment, good care for others, good benevolence. We all are impacted by people with good hearts, good energy, and we are negatively impacted by those who are otherwise. Next, accept that which you see happening in the world is in synchronicity with everything else. And if it's negative, look, you didn't have one day 50 million Germans wake up, go outside, and all start goose-stepping down the street saying, we're murderers, we're genocidalists, we're going to kill Jews, we're going to kill gypsies, we're going to kill artists, communists. But those who did the killing never thought themselves as killers. Those who watched the killing never thought they were participating as enablers. Those who were in the families of people who went to work each day to kill others never thought that they were a bad parent, a bad husband, a bad wife, but they were. If you're engaged in something that's wrong, everyone that's engaged in it at any level is wrong, not just the people who made the final decision of the person that shot the gun or the person that robbed the bank or the person that committed adultery or the person that did, you know, the person who was a gossip monger. If you listen to gossip, how different are you than the person sharing the gossip? We do not appreciate the complexity of the issue when we participate in subordinating our spiritual values. We can rationalize it was politically expedient, economically to our advantage. It was emotionally important in that short term. There are unlimited amounts of compressed excuses we use for making bad choices. So what if you just chose not to make any more bad choices and not to harmonize with people who are doing something that's negative? And if you doubt me, go down to Washington, D.C., which is the most septic place on the planet. It's one giant cesspool. And I'm not going to give a break to the person that works in a company because it's good for their rent, lifestyle, and kids' education. But they're making arms that are going to kill innocent people. And we've gotten to where we don't even criticize the industrial complex, let alone its employees, let alone its policymakers, let alone the people in Washington to allow all this to happen to begin with. When we start losing our capacity for critical judgment, then we're putting ourselves in line to have another genocide. And that we've had enough of, I think. So maybe this year, if you're not harmonizing with something as constructive, positive, then you're the problem. So let's not be the problem. Accept that others need to experience their own reality. Stop trying to bring people over to your team, your side, your ideology, your position, the rightness of your mindset. That's not your responsibility. Try to respect the boundaries. We can have multiple approaches to life, multiple realities, multiple ideals, multiple truths. It becomes very dangerous when we say, oh, there's only one truth and it's mine. Take a look at the Middle East. Take a look at the signers of the Declaration of Independence who had slaves. Take a look at the bankers in New York. Take a look at all the politicians. Take a look at so many things today. Everybody wants you to be on their team to experience their reality or to create an association with their reality. How many likes can we get? What does it matter? Everybody has their own version of the truth, and their version is no more correct than yours. Your version of the truth is dictated by your path and your learning experience, your epigenetic input, and your conscious awareness, which is completely defined by your own vibrational state. That is why we are so unique and capable of creating our own realities. We just feel very uncomfortable if someone comes into our midst who has a reality that doesn't jive with us. And hence we have the need for superior logic, superior reasoning. If I go to Harvard, I must be better because I'm at Harvard. No, the fact that you're at Harvard doesn't make you any better than anyone else, nor any less than anyone else. It's just information. But if you go to a state school, you can't be as literate, you can't be as smart, you can't be as... Says who? The same identical criteria for graduating and obtaining a degree applies to every single accredited school in America. Everything else is pure illusion, nothing but illusion. You're no better for going to an Ivy League school than a state school. You may feel you are. The people who helped put you there or needed you to be there may feel that you're blessed and gifted and special and smarter. And hence we end up with this whole separation very early on in life, the best and brightest and everybody else. One gets the rewards, everyone else is disdained for not being as competitive, as aggressive, as acceptable. But the reality is you can get a good education at the state level, and you can get a bad education at an Ivy League school. But maybe I'm wrong. Let me just think for a moment. The people who were the architects of Watergate, there were 67 of them. How many were from Ivy League schools? Almost all. So should we then assume that you're more likely to be indifferent to the needs of the greater people and justice and law because you went to an Ivy League school? No. That would be an unsupportable statement. We have to start realizing how much our perception dictates our reality. So stop thinking you're the only person that has a truth and then being indifferent to those who are different. Also, accept that you cannot change or control anybody else, nor is it your responsibility. I remember once recently, I was sitting in an airport. It was in Dallas, and I had a long layover to get to where I was going to do some filming. And a guy came over, and he says, you that health guy? I said, yeah. He said, okay. He said, I got a question for you. I said, sure. If I can help you, I'd be happy to. He says, why don't you prove to me? And then he went into this whole discourse about how people like myself don't have the evidence to support our conclusions that a change in attitude or change in diet will make us healthier. And it turns out that this guy works for the pharmaceutical industry, by the way. I don't think that was the part that was relevant, but he was very overweight. He's at one point said, prove to me what I should be doing. I said, friend, I'm not the one who's overweight. I'm not the one with high blood pressure. I'm not the one who's diabetic, and I'm not the one who's going to die sooner. So I'm not about to prove anything to you. You have gotten where you're at with a great deal of discipline, a great deal of fortitude, and a great deal of self-righteous indignation to any other truth than your own. So you win. You win. I'm not here to prove anything to anyone. I don't have to prove anything to anyone. And if anyone asks me to prove anything to them, I'm not going to. If you want to know my truth, then at least subordinate your own to where you can be neutral to observe it without reacting and use some reason. Are you capable of that? Well, you got an attitude. I don't have an attitude, friend. I'm just not going to take your bullshit or anyone else's. I'm not impressed by celebrity, you know, your industry that you work with. Did you ever wake up in the morning and ask yourself how many people will be sick and how many people have adverse reactions? How many people will die from the arthritis medication that you said you work for an arthritis company? And you know Vioxx killed 60 to 500,000 people. Did you take any responsibility for that, selling it to the doctors who then used it on the patients? Did that in any way impact it that maybe you're in the wrong industry? Anyhow, he got up and walked away, which is good because I was trying to write. But this whole idea that somehow we have to prove our truth. You don't have to prove your truth. Screw it. Someone doesn't like you, let them leave you alone. I would rather be in the comfort of my own conscious and aware thoughts than surrounded by fools who want me to prove that my way is right. I learned that a long time ago. Let me tell you a little story. True story. I was once told by a quackbuster who I debated on national television, and he looked like a complete idiot. Not prepared at all. So anyhow, I got him, after the debate, we were outside, and he says, you know, the only thing you're going to be taken seriously is if you get a PhD from accredited school, you published in the independent peer-reviewed literature, you become a real scientist, and went on all of these things. He said, until that time, he said, you have no virtue and no value at all. I thought, what he said? And I thought, well, will that make a difference? Because at that point, there was a massive campaign to discredit anyone who didn't have higher degrees. I was a registered dietitian. I had an undergraduate degree and Bachelor of Science in Nutrition. But that didn't seem to matter. So I went back and I got my PhD with honors. And I became a research scientist and later a research fellow. And published in peer-reviewed literature. In fact, an article of mine was just cited a week ago, by the way. And another article is going out. and received invitations to scientific journals and, scientific societies to present information, and did. And then I realized that none of that made any difference at all. None of it. I took a person that I reversed their autism, another one reversed their Alzheimer's, another one reversed their hepatitis B, took them in front of an audience of 7,000 scientists in Washington, D.C., shared that information, and not a single person followed up to ask, how did you do it? Because it didn't fall within the paradigm and the limitations of every paradigm, because every paradigm becomes a prison. The more educated, the more respected you are, the less you're capable of learning. Now think of that for a moment. That's been my personal experience. The renegades, the people that don't fit in, the people that don't follow everyone else off a cliff, the people that are not getting up within their gray flannel suits every day, those are the people I'd rather spend time with, because at least they have not the certainty of absolutism. They're not cult-like true believers. And once you become so rigidified, for whatever motivation, because you've been accepted, because it pays your bills, because it gives you some false sense of security, you've ceased to seek the truth. You believe the only truth is the truth that you have been told to believe in, and that creates a barrier. You could have a 30-foot wall around you, so you can only live with what you know, and you can't allow anything else in, because that becomes the virus that can pollute the purity of your thoughts, your processes. So how do you grow from that? You can't. You have to grow outside of the existing paradigm. Well, let me put it a different way. I was just writing a new article today, and it'll be out next week, and I'm submitting it to some journals. But I'm also going to post it on my website so you can all read it. And it's probably the longest, most definitive article ever written in world history. It's now over 180 pages long, but I'll break into segments. Fully documented, using only orthodox statistics, that shows that everything about our war on cancer. The title of the article is The War on Cancer in Medical Vietnam. Everything you could possibly do wrong, smart women have been actually rewarded for doing wrong and praised for doing wrong and heralded as heroic for being wrong. They're not curing anybody. 92%, 93% of all the people taking their therapies die, and 50% of those die from the therapy itself. Well, I did the math, and that's 7 million people have died from just the chemotherapy. I'm not even including radiation. So how could you say that killing 7 million people makes you an expert? Makes you qualified, makes you the lead, gives you the special insight? How could you possibly say that you deserve anything? But that's what orthodoxy does to you. That's what being a true believer in the medical paradigm does. It stops all honest and open discourse. It prevents you from changing even if you do have an input. The fact that two people debate doesn't mean that either person will change their position irrespective of the rightness of another person's arguments. So, one day you wake up and you go about your business knowing you're going to be rewarded. Your whole lifestyle, your social position, your professional standing is all based upon don't change anything unless it's within the existing paradigm where the paradigm can take credit for it. Fair enough. What about pulling back and what was your original goal? To cure cancer? Then you've abandoned your goal. Yeah, most people abandon their goals early on into their profession because they realize they got to compromise in order to survive. So they're doing all this compromising. The trouble is, once you've compromised enough, you keep compromising, you're so far removed from your original mastery of field, your original intent, your original idealism, it's not possible then to change because all these other people are depending upon you. Gary? That is the problem. So, and that's a big problem. So now we got a whole bunch of people who are rewarded for their efforts. And when their efforts fail, they're rewarded in spite of it. So what if people come along and actually succeed. You can't have that. You must destroy them. The message has to be denigrated, and the messenger must be eliminated. In any field, it doesn't matter what the field is, because they represent a threat to the paradigm, to the security. So a person wanting peace going to Washington, D.C., advocating a peace ticket, wouldn't get 3 votes. And yet, when you ask people, do you want peace? Sure. Do you want to end terrorism? Absolutely. Do you want healthy children? Do you want children in America to be healthy and happy? Yes. Are you willing to do anything about that? No. Oh, heaven, no. No, because I couldn't get a job. I couldn't work. I couldn't, yeah. Well, you could, just not in the existing paradigm. So just remember where you get your information, how you process that information, the people you put in, that you bring into your life, and how you alter your own conscious self to meet their needs or them yours, determines what your reality is. So in this new year, my hope is that people will stop trying to change everyone and let people be who they are, and then align yourself with people who are being honest in themselves, but it's in a good positive alignment with you. And also accept that procrastinators are made, not born. Procrastination is not a problem of time management or planning. It is often one of simply not knowing where to begin our journey, and sometimes laziness. We have so many dreams and goals, but none of them will ever get accomplished in a positive way if we're always leaving it for tomorrow. Half done. I'll come back to it. Take the time to consider there is no time better than right now to make the changes and make them completely, not piecemeal, not a little bit, not a token amount. That doesn't work. If something's important to you, make it important. Don't postpone it, whatever it is. It's not important why you haven't done the right thing. It's accepting that your mindset and the tracking of all your excuses and their sources is preventing you, because you're giving the power to the dominant energy, the negative dark side of our nature. You have to confront that and keep reinforcing with positive actions, positive attitude, that today I'm going to do this, even if I want to eat the pizza, even if I want to drink the alcohol, even if I want to do A, B, and C, I'm not going to, because I know the outcome. But I also can imagine an outcome 6 months now, a year from now, if I make positive choices in everything in my life, from the work I do, to where I live, to the food I eat and the beverages I drink, to the thoughts I have. I can only imagine how much better I'm going to be. And therefore, that helps. Meditation and mindfulness are tremendous resources for stopping procrastination. So those are some thoughts. Hopefully, that in this new year, that will help some people. Now we're going to go to a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to have a look at wars around the world that we should pay attention to, because our tax dollars fund them. Our politicians legitimize them. Our media give us fake stories on why we need to be there and glorify the militarism and the hegemonic mindset that allows us to feel that we have a right to engage in these conflicts and regime changes. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Before 9/11, Americans knew when we were at war. There were commercials about supporting the effort or supporting our troops. Americans even knew we were at war in Vietnam, even though our government refused to call it a war. But in 2016, Americans don't seem to realize that now we're not only involved in one war, we're waging war in 5 countries. Of course, Americans might realize we've got something military-ish going on in Iraq. But we're told we're only advising Iraqi military. No one seems to realize we're still dropping lots of bombs there. Same thing with Syria. Americans are told we don't have boots on the ground, so they don't seem to realize we're dropping thousands of bombs there too, or that we're dumping weapons all over the area. Americans don't seem to realize that we are conducting war in Iraq and Syria. Then there's Somalia. Just a few days ago, the New York Times did a huge write-up about our secret war there and how Obama has escalated it largely over the past year, sending in hundreds of troops and airstrikes, along with a bunch of contractors. Not one American I know could even point to Somalia on a map, let alone identify it as a country we're at war with. Same thing with Yemen. Most Americans have no idea that their government is actively helping Saudi Arabia bomb Yemen into bits. We've given them logistical support for their airstrikes, which specifically target civilians. And we just recently launched our own cruise missiles at some radar installations there. How many Americans do you know that know our military is bombing Yemen? Or Libya, the fifth country we're at war with right now. How many Americans do you know that their military just launched 30 strikes on one Libyan city in just 3 days? Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Yemen, and Libya. These are five countries where America is actively waging war, and Americans have no idea. Why? By design. Wars used to be a rallying cry for freedom, but now our leaders know our wars are not so valiant. They know that if Americans did realize just how much death and destruction our military is causing, they might get upset. That's why war isn't even talked about anymore. In our media, during our presidential debates, nothing, not one word about all our wars. Here in America, we have the luxury of not knowing. The rest of the world is not so lucky. Tonight, let's talk about that.
Okay. And now, for those who didn't know about Saudi Arabia, I'm going to be playing tonight on my program this coming week, I'm going to play a long 27-minute clip about what it's like to be in Saudi Arabia. And why? Because that's one of our major allies. And we have absolute irrefutable proof that they're the sponsors of they're the number one sponsor of terrorism in the world. So why do we keep the fake news, the fake pretense that somehow, because they give us money, that is more important than all the damage they do, all the harm they inflict, including massive amount of spending and weaponizing terrorist groups? So that's coming at you with Abby Martin. Tonight on my Progressive Commentary Hour, I'm going to take a one-hour look at autism and vaccines to tie all those ends together to show you how much evidence we have that vaccines are a contributing factor to autism. Not the only factor, but a major contributing factor in spite of what people don't know. So anyone who has a kid who's been damaged, you want to listen to that. But now I want to show you some of the things that you take for granted every day. But in Saudi Arabia, you can't take these things for granted. This is 10 things every day that are banned in Saudi Arabia. I just thought you'd appreciate this. Because remember, when you're supporting Obama, when you're supporting George Bush, when you're supporting Bill Clinton, when you're supporting Hillary Clinton, when you're supporting Donald Trump, you're also supporting what they support, because they're never critical of it. And if they're never critical because they have this unholy relationship with them, then shouldn't we hold our legislators accountable to end human rights abuses around the world? I think that we should. I think we should stop doing any business and bring sanctions against Saudi Arabia. Listen up. These are just some simple things.
10 everyday things banned in Saudi Arabia. Single men and women are not allowed to share the same social space in public places like restaurants and malls. Women and men can only mix as husband and wife or as family members. Folks even line up in two separate lines, one for men, the other for women, at McDonald's to prevent social mixing. What's all the fuss about not allowing the opposite to meet and mix as they wish, to prevent anything of a nature passing between unmarried singles? Hard to fathom how people living in the country got married in the first place. No more selling of pet cats and dogs, and also no walking them in public parks in the capital, Riyadh. The authorities believe taking your mutt for an afternoon stroll could threaten the society's moral fabric. And how exactly can a hairy, four-legged, domesticated creature manage to pull off such a scheme, you may wonder? Actually, it's back to the thing. They don't want single men and women meeting to express admiration for each other's dogs or cats or for each other. Camera phones were declared forbidden in September 2000 because these modern-day gadgets could lead folks to stray from the ways of Islam by promoting obscenity. Stores are not allowed to sell them, forcing retailers to find other means to do so. Black market porn must be thriving in the country. The only way you can see a movie is by taking a trip to Bahrain, where movie theaters and alcohol consumption get the green light. Movie theaters are places where men and women can meet unsupervised. And who knows what unholy things they could get up to, especially when the lights go down. You have to be married for that. If you're a woman under 45 years old, you need permission to travel on your own. Your husband or father must accompany you or give signed permission that it's okay for you to be walking about solo. Evidently, Saudis don't trust women enough to allow them to move about freely unsupervised, since they're too susceptible to immoral actions. Non-Muslims are not allowed to publicly worship other gods or carry Bibles, crosses, and other religious paraphernalia not sanctioned by Islamic law. They don't want the competition. In addition, you risk facing the death penalty should you desire to convert from Islam to another religion. You'd have to be suicidal to even think about it. Women's sportswomen are prohibited from participating in sports, and thus girls have no sports or gym classes at school. International Olympic Committee members aren't impressed with Saudi authorities about this and want to ban the kingdom from the games if they keep sending only male athletes. No doubt, the sight of a Saudi woman's naked legs could lead spirited local lads astray by stirring unholy desires in their hearts, minds, and elsewhere. This is not about the women are bad drivers sexist nonsense you hear all over, but about preventing women from leaving the home more than is necessary. Getting into a car and take to the road on their own, having more opportunities to hook up with men and uncovering their faces. The only times women are allowed to drive is when they do so in a private compound or in the desert. Only male family members or hired drivers can drive Saudi women around. Though the music industry and now you hear me, now you don't musicians are sort of thriving in an underground way in the country, this universal language of song and dance is forbidden. You won't find music blaring from loudspeakers in malls or offered at public schools either. Still, many locals teach themselves or hire private tutors to teach piano lessons or learning to play other instruments. On Unhappy Valentine's Day on February 14th every year, red better not be your favorite color. No one is allowed to wear anything resembling red, or the authorities will see red. No red roses. Shops risk being shut down if they dare sell it, or scarves or red anything. The reason for being anti-Valentine's Day is because it's not an Islamic practice, and may therefore lead Muslims to get other ideas and also to discourage any notion of romance and dating among youngsters.
Okay, I'm going to finish up today with some observations from John Whitehead from Counterpunch. He looks back on the last year. Here's what he sees. Again, this is his personal perception. Endless wars, toxic politics, violence, hunger, poverty, police shootings, mass shootings, economic downturns, political circuses, senseless tragedies, loss, heartache, intolerance, prejudice, hatred, apathy, meanness, cruelty, poverty, again, inhumanity, and greed. After 3 years of increasingly toxic politics, the ruling oligarchy won and we the people lost. Also, more people died at the hands of the police. Shootings of unarmed civilians, especially African Americans, by police claim more lives than previously estimated, and reinforcing concerns about police misconduct and the use of excessive force. Also, we lost some bright stars this past year, and no one is asking, okay, yes, they died, but did they have to die? Could they have been saved? The answer is every one of the ones I saw that died, not that I personally saw them, I didn't, Muhammad Ali, David Bowie, Leonard Cohen, John Glenn, Merrill Haggard, Harper Lee, Prince, Nancy Reagan, Janet Reno, Elie Wiesel, Gene Wilder, and about 50 others, all could have changed something within their lifestyle and given them an additional quality of life and length of life. The fact that we never even discuss, is it possible to change the circumstances within a person's life, like their diet, and allow them to have less pain, a longer life, we're not even discussing. We should. Free speech was dealt a knockout this year. The First Amendment activities were pummeled, punched, kicked, choked, chained, and generally gagged all across the country. The reasons for such censorship varied widely from political correctness and safety concerns and bullying to national security and hate crimes. Debate over equality took many forms, but again, it was not won by the activists. Children were hurt this year, and because of the quality of the American diet, where we have an epidemic of obese and sick children, many of whom will not outlive their parents. Environmental concerns were downplayed in favor of corporate interest. Flint, Michigan, contaminated water was declared a state and federal emergency, while thousands protested the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline. But it doesn't mean that either the people in Flint will get better water or the people in the Dakotas will win that. But why didn't leading political leaders come forward and say, we deserve clean water? But they didn't. None of them did. Technology rendered Americans vulnerable to threats from government spies, police, hackers, and power failures. The Justice Department battled Apple in court over access to its customers' locked, encrypted iPhones. Microsoft sued the U.S. government over its access to customers' emails and files without their knowledge. Yahoo confirmed that over 500 million user accounts have been hacked. Police departments across the country continue using Stingray devices to collect cell phone data in real time, often without a warrant. Police became even more militarized and weaponized. And computers asserted their superiority over the human counterparts, who were easily controlled by bread and circuses. Google's artificial intelligence program, AlphaGo, defeated its human opponent in a DeepMind challenge, and terrorism took many forms. And yet, here we are. And what are we doing about it? And the deep state reared its ugly head and continues to manifest and flex its muscle. So what we need to do is not repeat this coming year with last year. We have an opportunity, because of all the failures and all the crisis, to change. My hope is that we will find the courage, the strength, and the discipline to engage in that change. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
And the land is dark, and the moon is the only